This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
When you think about the toughest jobs in the world, vets might not be the first to spring to mind. After all, it's puppies, kittens, lots of love, yeah? But behind the scenes, the picture can be very different. On World Suicide Prevention Day, we're joined by Nick and Dr. Paul from ReadyVetGo to talk about the hidden pressures of the vet industry and what pet owners might not realise about the impact of their choices. And if any of this conversation raises any issues for you, don't forget you can find a list of support services at joy.org.au/support, or you can call Lifeline on 13 11 4. Nick and Paul, good to have you back on the show.
Good afternoon.
Thanks, Warren.
Let's start with you, Nick. Can you paint a picture for us? Why is suicide such a serious issue within the vet industry?
Yeah, it's something that I think people are very surprised about when they hear that veterinarians are 4 times more likely to die by suicide than people in the sort of general population. It's something that is still being looked into, and we've got really great foundations and services that are doing some research into this. Some examples of some of the really nice foundations are Sophie's Legacy or Flynn's Walk, who was started because people have died by suicide. It's something that is quite prevalent and something that we really need to focus on and keep an eye on.
Paul, you're a vet. What's the biggest pressures you and your colleagues face every day that perhaps pet owners like myself may not be aware of?
Yeah, and look, I firstly wanted to say thanks, Warren, for bringing this topic up. I know it's a bit of a heavy one for that drive time home, but we really want people to be aware that we're under a lot of pressure as vets to be both the caregiver, the person who's going to provide a treatment plan for a beloved cat, dog, rabbit, bird, etc. But we have the pressure as well of balancing the needs of that patient with the financial limitations that an owner might have. It's a really delicate balance that we have to strike in the veterinary world because we don't have the benefit of things like Medicare to help subsidize the cost of the care that we provide. So these costs are 100% borne by the pet owner, and they stem from the inherent costs that we as an industry face to provide really great human-grade levels of care at certain times. So, you know, it's a financial stress that we feel. There's an emotional burden that we also take home every day when we have a pet who maybe didn't have the outcome that we wanted, or when we have complications that arise during the treatment of a pet's illness. It can be a lot for us to leave at the door and check out from and not take with us when we are just taking off our stethoscope and our scrubs.
And it must be a very difficult situation. For example, you've got a pet owner there, you've got a pet, and you're saying, you know, this treatment in order to prolong the life or whatever it needs to do for the health of that pet is going to cost X amount of money. Do you get owners of pets saying, oh, come on, I can't afford it, please, can you do it? Yet you've got to also then fork out the expense of providing that treatment. I mean, does that happen?
Yeah, it certainly does. And it's something that's really unfortunate on both sides. You know, of course, if we were able to, we would save every pet if that was possible. We've been in situations where we have, you know, transported a pet to hospital and, you know, there was a colleague in this hospital that Paul noticed in the corner crying and hysterical. And when he asked if that person was okay, they, you know, said, I just had to put to sleep a pet that really just needed 24 more hours of care, but the owners couldn't afford that. And it's something that, you know, not only does that bring a psychological burden on the team, not only the veterinarians, you know, the vet nurses, the reception staff, admin, you know, the whole service, it often, sometimes can come along with aggression and, you know, blame as well. So not only do we feel that within ourselves, but then there's times when owners, family members, friends, express that and put that onto us as well. And it's a really hard thing to take away.
I know the vet that I go to at the clinic, there's a sign in the reception that says we will, you know, we've got a zero tolerance policy towards aggression towards our staff. We're doing the best that we can. Nick, have you faced that, or Paul, have you faced that aggression as a vet?
Yeah, I think Nick and I have both very infrequently dealt with that. We're really lucky with the service that we have with Ready Vet Go, where the people who are reaching out to us typically are not people who are there to cause trouble or to behave in irrational ways. But we get people who are in dire circumstances with their pet. And unfortunately, part of that process of grief and stress is that that grief and stress manifests in a way that people don't sometimes expect it to within themselves. They come out, you know, with all guns blazing in a way. And we've had people who have, you know, cursed at us, called us, you know, greedy people. And none of these things are true, right? You know, we're there to help pets, and we're not here for the money. We're here for the love, and we're here for the passion behind what we do. And that is the majority, 99% of vets and veterinary nurses and receptionists in this industry. So it's really tough not to take that aggression personally. We have to, I think, build a degree of resilience within ourselves to say, it's not about me, actually. I'm going to take myself out of the situation, not take it personally, and just focus on what that owner is really concerned about.
Do you chat with colleagues who experience it as well? Is there a bit of a support network?
Yeah, there is. We started in the US, actually. There's a group that's called Not One More Vet, or NOMV. A lot of veterinarians and vet nurses are part of that group. It is focused primarily around prevention of suicide and self-harm, addictive behaviors, etc. But it's meant to help create a group within the industry, a bit of familiarity, you know, where people understand what someone else is going through. And I think it's really fortunate that we've got, you know, out of really dark situations that have occurred, people who have taken their own lives, we've got foundations that have blossomed from those situations of despair that have brought light to the situation in the vet industry. Sophie's Legacy, Flynn's Walk, which Nick mentioned, those are two veterinarians that were in the Melbourne community that were, their families were affected by their suicides, and they wanted to bring that issue to light. We're really grateful for the work they do.
We're with Nick and Dr. Paul from Ready Vet Go. We're marking World Suicide Prevention Day by talking about the mental health challenges that vets face and what we can all do to ease the pressure. Let's talk about something that we all don't like, that is euthanasia when it comes to dealing with your pet. It's one of the most horrible things to go through, certainly as a pet owner. And I know that when I've been through it a couple of times, I noticed my vet also is quite attached to the animals as well. And I can see and feel the emotion when the vet had to go through it. Now, I'm talking about one or two times that I've experienced this in my life. I'm imagining for an ordinary vet clinic, it's probably several times a week that this has to happen. How do you deal with that? How do you do it?
It's something that, you know, and I learned this being a human nurse, in order to be able to give the best care that we can possibly give, there does need to be a line where you draw in order for it to not cross over into something that's then going to affect the next patient that you see or, you know, taking it home with yourself. But it's sometimes, you know, really, really hard. It doesn't mean that we don't have an emotional connection to that, but it does mean that, you know, you have to build this professional wall that only sort of filters in, you know, your ability to be able to empathize with people, but not fully get into it to a point where, you know, we're grieving ourselves. You know, you certainly do feel for our clients, and you can relate to that, and you do need to do that because people want that in that moment. They want to know that you understand and that you care. So it is a really fine line.
Paul, have you got any comments here?
Yeah, I fully agree with Nick. I think there's this balance that you have to strike, and it's something you just don't learn in school. You have to sort of, you might be given the tools to figure out how to have these conversations with people, but until you're doing it in practice, you don't really, you have to take that time to have that experience and build that balance of, you know, acknowledging what someone's going through and empathizing, like Nick said, being able to relate to them and even in situations where we're helping people through a euthanasia with their pet, we'll tell them, you know, that we've been through this ourselves. We have multiple times. And that I think, you know, we can separate that, but also acknowledge that we know what they're feeling and that we're not unaware of how hard it is. I think when we talk about euthanasia, it can be at times uncomfortable for people to discuss. You get, I guess, various different discussions on that spectrum of people who are very open about discussing end of life care, people who just feel so uncomfortable about the thought of it, some people who just don't consider it as an option. And it may be against their personal beliefs or their religious beliefs to think of that option. We bring it up, you know, as part of our oath that we take as vets. We take an oath to do no harm and to end suffering. And euthanasia, fortunately, can be part of that treatment plan. And I think what it really comes down to is knowing when we're in a situation where we know that we can't improve a pet's quality of life or their comfort through modern medicine, we don't want them to go on being miserable, and we have that out, which is a blessing in a lot of situations, because there are far worse things than death. Suffering in an animal is just a horrible thing to watch. And we have to counsel people through that and figure out when the time is right. And that's a really situational thing.
And I imagine also it's a fine balance, isn't it, between when the animal is suffering too much and the human is saying, no, I want to hang on a little bit longer, and having to make that call. I know the clinic that I go to burns a candle if someone is saying goodbye to their pet. And I can tell you can look in the waiting room, no one has a dry eye. They don't even know the pet that is or the owners. It's such a sad thing to go through. Let's just go back for a minute. You mentioned about the financial stresses of what it's like, I suppose, to be a pet owner and not being able to afford the treatment. And then from the vet's perspective, having to say, look, we can't perform the treatment because it costs us money. What about pet insurance? I mean, we hear all sorts of stories saying that it's worthwhile. Some people say it's a waste of money. What do you reckon? How does it ease the pressures when it comes to looking after your pet?
Yeah, look, I think it's, you know, personally, I think it's invaluable. Yes, there might be circumstances where you may never need to use that insurance for your pet. But when there is a circumstance, whether it's, you know, an injury where they've, you know, ran a certain way in a park and they now need to get knee surgery, or, you know, they've eaten a foreign object and they need to have exploratory surgery or retrieval surgery, you know, things that can cost $10,000, $15,000 sometimes, that's where it becomes worth it. And I think what people don't understand, unfortunately, or very few people understand, is that even though we get Medicare as humans, we're still paying for that. That still comes out of our Medicare levies. That's insurance in itself. And to say that getting pet insurance isn't worth it, you know, it's just not true. It's insurance. It's the same reason why you get car insurance or house insurance. You know, we all get house insurance, but our house doesn't always burn down or get robbed, you know, but it's still worth it.
Yeah, and I think there's a misconception when people get insurance and think that it's going to cover everything, right? You know, your consults, your vaccines. And there are some hospital groups that might have programs that help offset that cost, which is awesome. It's mainly for situations like accident and emergency, where if you've got that policy, you're most often covered up to 80%. And we have seen just the wonders that does for the pet, for the veterinary team, who don't have to worry about having those financial discussions as heavily, where they can just do what they need to do and not have to, you know, quote, cut corners in a way, or make some financial choices that are going to maybe not mean the best care that they could provide, but giving, you know, the minimum care within that financial budget that a client might have. Insurance is a godsend.
We're chatting with Nick. Nick, go.
I was just going to say that the reason why we link this with what we're talking about today and why we're so passionate about it is because those, you know, for example, Sophie Putland, who Sophie's legacy is made of, you know, the day that she died by suicide, she was abused by a client. And this is the reason why we do talk about that insurance component, because it was in association with finances. And I really wanted to stress that when we were talking about this today, because it's something that is a really complex system, and this is where we all need to work together because we don't have that Medicare rebate. So, yeah, doing your part and getting your insurance only helps the whole system, not only your pet.
We're chatting with Nick and Dr. Paul from Ready Vet Go, marking World Suicide Prevention Day by talking about the mental health challenges that vets face. From a client side, what are some small things we can do to reduce the stress on yourselves?
Yeah, I think the first thing would be preparedness. You know, I think preparedness goes so far. That could be insurance. That could be having a pet insurance policy that's going to cover in a bad situation. That might be preparedness where you're preventing the accident or the injury from happening at all. You know, that could be things like dog fights, you know, preventing your dog from being in a situation where they could cause a fight or be part of a fight or get attacked. Keeping things like household toxins out of reach, not letting your dogs and cats eat things they shouldn't that can lead to gastro and surgical foreign bodies and lots of stuff. So I think, you know, from a before the problem happens situation, preparedness can really keep everybody out of harm's way. And when we've got clients in situations where they're in that emergency, we need people to respect that we're doing our best. Every veterinary nurse and veterinarian is doing their best at all times. And we care immensely, some of us too much. And we want people to remember that we're human as well. That's part of Sophie's Legacies campaign, is to remind people that we're only human. And we are, we always have that pet's best interest in mind. So we ask people to be patient with us, to take a breath, you know, sit side by side with us while we together build that treatment plan for their animal. So we can both achieve a good outcome for their pet, because we're not on opposite sides of the fence. We're on the same side. We both have the same goals.
Yeah. I think another really good thing is to just be aware, you know, that this is happening, and this is exactly why we wanted to talk about this today. But, you know, where you can really help is the people who can really help are the people who aren't necessarily in crisis. You know, if you're going in for a consult that day for your pet, you know, a routine vaccine, just ask your vet and your vet nurses if they're okay or if they've had a good day. Mm. Tell them how much you appreciate them, because you don't know what they've done 5 minutes before that. And unless you've been there, you'll never know. And it's really traumatizing, because the frequency of death for veterinary patients is so much higher than it is for human hospitals, because we have so many pets. And so the likelihood that you're going to talk to someone who has put, and you know, for the right reasons, an end to something's life that day is very high. And they might not have received that that care from the owner who may have just had their pet put to sleep, but they can receive it from you. So if you're having a good day, just ask them how they are, thank them for what they do.
And I can say, as a pet owner, I mean, things can happen, and you can plan for the for everything and reduce every hazard that you possibly can. I know years ago I fertilized my plants and I'd mulched over them and everything, and one of my good friends, she said, "Oh, can you look after my dog Ginger for the day?" And Ginger came over, and I said, "Yeah, of course, absolutely." I look out the kitchen window, and there's Ginger munching on fertilizer from one of the pot plants.
Oh, no.
All good. Everything worked out okay. I panicked, thinking, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to kill my best friend's dog." But it all worked out. So it does happen. It doesn't matter how prepared you are.
Absolutely.
Somehow they find it.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. And look, the other things that we want to mention outside of insurance is, as Paul kind of insinuated before, have a game plan. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, keeping them away from all the fertilizer, but if you're not going to have insurance, have a bank account, have something, have, you know, my advice would be to figure out what your financial capabilities are and put a certain percentage away. That might only be $10 a week, but that $10 a week can add up, and your burden is only by the percentage that comes in. So you don't necessarily have to do the $50. There is also another service called VetPay that we do want to bring to attention. And that is a service that is fabulous, that brings, can foot your bill for you. It's a 15-minute application in a time of crisis. And that can mean all the difference as well. And most veterinary clinics and hospitals do accept vet pay.
Vet pay. I hadn't heard of that before.
Yeah. Excellent service. And I can only imagine it's saved thousands and thousands of lives.
Nick and Paul, so good to chat with you. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you so much for raising such an important issue today.
Thanks for letting us talk about it, Warren. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Warren, for your time. We appreciate
and,
it.
And anyone who needs any support, sophieslegacy.com, go ahead and check them out. And Flynn's Walk. We're not ambassadors. We just really big fans.
Important passionate organisations. Yeah. Nick and Paul, thank you so much. That's Nick and Dr. Paul from Ready Vet Go. If that conversation has brought up anything for you, please reach out for help. You can call Lifeline 13 1114, and if your pet needs care and you want to know more about Nick and Dr. Paul and the team, you can visit readyvetgo.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.